Welcome to our podcast. Great that you're back. We very much appreciate your interest, and we have already gotten some super feedback from the first podcast. So please send us your messages whenever you want. Go to www.theoriginalbuttwigcenter.com. Contact us, give us your questions. We are very keen to support you. We have more than 20 years of experience in this field. We have spoken to more than 10,000 people with cancer in our program, more than 1,500 people. We have supported them actively on their journey. And today, as always, is my good friend Lothar Hirneise. And we're going to talk today about go a little bit deeper into the link between stress and cancer. We talk a little bit about Dr. Frieda, the wonderful woman we both met in Germany. And we're going to talk a little bit about the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system, where there's a strong link between that feeling of stress and the body response to that. So Lothar, let's kick it off with the theory of Dr. Frieda.
Yeah, well, yeah. Maybe I'll talk a few words about this famous and very friendly lady who died quite too early. Dr. Frieda was working in a famous hospital of Dr. Issels in Bavaria. Issels became very, very popular, not only in Germany, because he was the first doctor who had an hospital and did in this hospital alternative cancer therapies. And of course, he also had very, very famous patients from all over the world. Dr. Frieda wanted to do a work with the University of Vienna in Austria, and about hormones, about different kind of hormones. And for that, she started to check the adrenaline hormone in the body of the cancer patients in this hospital. And she was then very, very, totally surprised that the cancer patients, they had a very low level. You know, normal level is around 20, and most of the patients, they had less than 2. So around 10% or less, what is a normal level of adrenaline in the body. And she was really surprised because she thought all these patients in the hospital, most of these patients have been final stage cancer patients. And she, of course, saw that they have very, very high levels of adrenaline, because we all know adrenaline is the hormone which we normally are having a lot in our blood, in our system, when we have stress. And of course, as a cancer patient in a final stage, you have stress. So she was totally surprised. This was the first thing. And then she did something, very interesting. She asked herself, what does this mean? And why does these people are having so low levels of adrenaline? So you have to understand, there are two hormones that are working very close together. This is insulin and adrenaline. Insulin is bringing sugar into the cell. We all know that. And adrenaline is the main hormone, or is main responsible for that the sugar also goes out of the cell. And now think about your adrenaline level goes down to 10% or less. The first question is, how is this possible? Let me say first, how is it not possible? It's not possible if you have a big, big stress just for a few days or for a few weeks. Then, of course, you still have a lot of adrenaline in the body. And this is not a problem at all. But the adrenaline level can go down if you have stress over years. How is this possible? For example, you are married with somebody who drinks too much alcohol. And so you don't have to have stress every day, you know, because he's not drunken, for example, your husband or your wife every day. But every day you're thinking about it. Every day you are worried that maybe something happens. So if you are married with somebody who drinks too much alcohol, you have everyday stress. And then over the years, you know, your kidneys, who are normally producing the adrenaline, they are not able to produce so much adrenaline you are using. And this is the reason why then the adrenaline level goes down. But this is a long, long process. This is not happening over a few days or weeks or months. Normally, this is only happening over many years. And I also tell you already a big, big challenge here. This is also the problem to bring it back up, you know. This is also not an easy thing. You can't inject just adrenaline because this stays only for a few minutes in your blood. It takes a long, long time, normally a lot of months, even years. So, and then what happens in a cell? If the adrenaline level is very low, in the cells, the sugar, too much sugar is in the cells, and the sugar stays too long in the cells. And then this is very bad for a cell because the cell has only two ways now. The first one is to die, or the second way is to get rid of the sugar. And this is exactly what a cancer cell is doing here. The cancer cell found a way to get rid of the sugar in this way that it stops that the oxygen goes into the mitochondria to produce the ATP. So it stops here, and then the cell is able to burn down. Normally it's 18 times more, but it can even go higher here. But let me say it burns down 20 times more sugar than a healthy cell. And so this system then is helping the cell to survive. And here comes a very, very important and interesting point. You can see on this example, a cancer cell is not a bad thing at all. A cancer cell is helping you to surviving. And this is maybe a totally different way of thinking.
And I think we have to add, helps you survive in the short term.
Yes, yes, that's right, you know. But this is like with each illness, you know, let me tell you what is for me an illness, a so-called illness. For me, there are no illnesses existing. For me, an illness is nothing else than a regulation system of the body or even of the mind. So let me give you one or two examples here. For example, if you have fever, is this an illness? Of course, this is an illness, and normally you get something to bring the fever down, for example, like antibiotics. But is this really a bad thing, fever? No, fever is helping to burn down, for example, bacteria or virus. Fever is helping that the cells can communicate very faster. So you see in the beginning, fever is a very, very good thing, which is helping the body. But if you have fever too long, it will kill you.
Yeah.
Or let me say high blood pressure, which is a big, big thing in medicine. Okay, so is a high blood pressure bad? Of course, everybody would say this is a very, very bad thing because it can make a stroke or a heart attack or something like this. But think about in the beginning, a high blood pressure is bringing the blood better to your small vessels and also better to the organs. And it's helping all the cells in your body. So this is not in the beginning a bad thing. And the same is with a tumor. Is a tumor a bad thing? Not at all in the beginning, because a tumor, just to give you a few examples, a tumor is burning down sugar. A tumor can collect a lot of poisons on one part in your body. A tumor can collect and kill, for example, parasites or fungus. We all know fungus, if a fungus goes to your brain, for example, you can die very fast. So it's quite better if the fungus is in your breast instead of your brain, and so on and so on. I could tell you here a lot of reasons why having a tumor is a good thing. But then later, of course, like with fever, like with all the illness is killing you. But once again, in the beginning, all these symptoms, or how I call it, all these regulation systems are helping you.
Absolutely. And I think this is a huge, huge breakthrough, because again, it takes away the victim consciousness, and you become more aware that it has a purpose, and we understand in the short term it helps you. And if you, that's the good news. The not so good news is if you don't do anything about the causes. If you change the causes, then that's a fantastic news, because now it tells you what you need to do. Now, if you're not changing the cause, obviously it will continue, and that's the bad news.
Exactly.
So I think a very interesting point when it comes to cancer and stress is the whole understanding of the sympathetic nerve system and the parasympathetic nervous system. And what I think science has proven is this, that if the stress response is activated, it's usually activated through the sympathetic nervous system, and then the fight and flight response takes place. And this means the body is prepared to fight something. And it's an old evolutionary program that's very important for survival. But it also means from a body functioning point that some of the body functions that is not needed, that are not needed in a stress fight and flight response, are shut down. For example, the intestines, the gut. So that is the seat of the immune system. So what I think the mind-body experts are finding out now is that if the sympathetic nerve system is activated, basically the immune system is shut down more or less. Now, the parasympathetic nervous system is called the relaxation and, interestingly enough, the digestion response. So it means we relax and we digest. So the immune system in the gut is activated again. And it means literally if you're stressed, your body cannot relax and not digest, and therefore the immune system is basically not working completely. And I think this is also an interesting understanding that the hormones play, again, a very important role in the system. And if we have too often the sympathetic nervous system activated, and this can be activated by mind stress in a sense, then the immune system is not working properly, and regulation is not working, but also the repair is not working. What are your views on those nervous systems?
I agree totally. What you said, there is nothing to add from my side. Maybe one thing I would like to show here also. This regulation system of the nerve system shows also that that we have a lot of old systems in our body. We maybe not need or we really don't use it really in a perfect way nowadays. So it's the same with the tumor, you know. This old system that a cancer cell can stop using oxygen maybe was very, very important, let me say 10, 20, 50,000 years ago. Like you said just a few seconds ago, the old system to run away if something happens. This was very, very important a few thousand years ago. But today it's so, so different. Today we don't need some of this, let me say, old evolutionary systems, but we still have them and we have to find a way how to live with them.
Absolutely. And I think from our experience and from the feedback of thousands of people we've spoken over the last 20 years, there is definitely something we cannot ignore. And that is that there is an increase in stress and there is an increase in lifestyle stress, more or less. And it's not an increase in acute stress, which is now and then stress. It is an increase in chronic stress. And therefore, that's why we address it. Even if it's not so easy to put a direct relationship between stress and cancer, but there's definitely a link to the whole issue.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I agree with that 100%. I also agree, like you said, it's not that we have today more stress than, let me say, the people 200 years ago. Not at all. But with the way how we feel stress, the way what we expect from life, I think this changed so much in the last years that we really can say people are having more stress even there. How can I say, there is no need to have this kind of stress. But people, they feel it. We talked to so many patients in the last 20 years, and I agree totally. Even I think sometimes, why is this so bad for this person, or why does this person feel so bad? It doesn't matter how I feel. The important thing is how much stress is the cancer patient are having, And quite often they have a lot of stress.
A very odd and strange thing we also experience. We sometimes have so-called very healthy people coming to us. In a sense, they are definitely not overweight. They have definitely done yoga and other physical exercises. They have a perfect body mass index. They are not diabetics. They do relax, meditate, and they have cancer. And then there is that big question, and for them it's a big question, why is this happening? And I think the link that is really here, the issue, is definitely something on the stress area. And then when those people take time to reflect, they completely agree. For example, I had a conversation the other day with a lady, and she's a complete perfectionist. So basically, she's her worst enemy. And she basically insults herself on a daily basis because she never fulfills the expectation that she herself has about something. And it could be little things, you know, how she talked, how she walked, how she went shopping, if she responded in a certain way, if she didn't achieve a certain task she set out herself to do and she didn't achieve it. So there's this massive perfectionistic drive, which is a complete stressor to the system.
Absolutely. We all know this other example. If people are not having money, and of course, if you don't have money, you have stress through not having money. And then later, maybe the same people, they earn money or they get some more money or they even become rich. But do they have less stress? Quite often not, yeah. And this is exactly what I said before, you know. It doesn't matter how we see a thing. The important thing is how much stress is somebody feeling.
Exactly. And that is the word, how much do they feel, perceive. So it's not an objective thing. It's a very much a subjective thing. And by the way, just to complete this podcast today, from our perspective, we see basically three ways to deal with stress. The number one issue is to understand the source of the stress and see if you can avoid it or stop it or at least reduce it so that the stressors get reduced. Secondly, learn relaxation, meditation, mindfulness practice. Do it on a daily basis so that your battery gets loaded up with energy. And thirdly, that's what we just talked about. Let's look at if we can change the interpretation, the thinking, how do we feel about something? Because if the bus is late, usually there is nothing to worry about. There's a second bus coming. But we get so upset about this that we miss that one bus. And that's something in our mind. It's a self-talk. That's the belief systems we have about being late. And that's something we can change. So those are definitely three ways of dealing with stress. Lothar, thank you very much for today, for the podcast. I think it's a very, very important one. I think over the next podcast, we will probably always come back to the issue of stress. But I hope we could share a little bit of our insights. Thank you very much, Lothar. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening in today again. And until we speak or hear ourselves or hear us again in the next podcast, all the best from Klaus.
And all the best from Lothar.